All right. Well, I am Dyron Daugherty. I teach religion here at Pepperdine University. I teach world religions and Christianity and culture and church history. Those are the things I do. And here is my co-presenter, Eric Trigestad.
Yes.
Oh, wow. That's a
lot. My name is Eric Trigestad. I'm the editor of the Christian Chronicle.
I'm going to hand that back to you before I hurt anybody.
Okay, good. All right. Okay, so you've come to a session on what survey says, what's happening in Churches of Christ. So it's a two-part. There's today and tomorrow. I think you're going to learn a lot. What we want to do is basically roll through, because we only have 45 minutes, right? So we want to roll through our first half of our slideshow today and then get some discussion, because I think that this presentation is provocative, not necessarily in a controversial way. It's going to provoke you to express yourself. That's what this survey does. We intentionally set up a survey to do that, to blast it out so that we could get people thinking about our fellowship, what's going on in the Churches of Christ. So let me just briefly outline, because I really do want to give you a chance to say something. So let's try to get through this and then and be thinking of what you'd like to say, because I want Eric and I want to hear it. Eric especially, because he's going to write it down and then write a story and then quote you. So be careful. That was my attempt at being funny. another survey. Okay. Yes, we felt like we needed to do another survey about the Churches of Christ. One of the problems in the Church of Christ is that we don't know what each other's doing. So because we're autonomous, we have a congregational church polity, as they say in religious studies. We have a congregational polity, which basically means that, as you know, each church is responsible only for itself. So there's not a whole lot of interaction other than things like this, Pepperdine lectureships. But otherwise, you know, we don't have some general minister and president. We don't have some committee in Nashville or something, or in Abilene. We just have individual churches. In fact, one year I had to, I served as an outside reviewer for an encyclopedia of American religion. And I had to review the article on Churches of Christ. And because any denomination or any fellowship, they always have a central headquarters, right? I mean, that's what makes a fellowship or denomination what it is. And this guy that wrote the article on the encyclopedia entry on Churches of Christ, take a wild guess where he wasn't a member, obviously, of the Churches of Christ. He was just a scholar who wrote this long article, actually, long and well-done article on the Churches of Christ. But it was obvious that he wasn't from the Churches of Christ, because guess where he put our headquarters? Take a wild guess where he put the headquarters of the Church of Christ.
Nashville, Tennessee.
But he had an address.
Gospel
Advocate. That's where he put the headquarters for the Church of Christ, was the office of the Gospel Advocate. So it just shows that, you know, we don't have that in the Churches of Christ. I mean, we have a few journals, we have a few universities, but other than that, we're just this loosely, very loosely connected network. So we wanted to do this through the Christian Chronicle because we got to thinking, really, the only thing that we have in the Churches of Christ that serves as kind of a center point for connecting us, or I should say connecting a lot of us, is the Christian Chronicle. And if you think about it, it's the only thing that would serve as that, as kind of a center point. I mean, if you can think of one, let me know, but that's the best thing I can think of. I don't know how many of our churches are connected to the Christian Chronicle. Do you know, Eric?
Our subscriber list in the U.S. is about 118,000 mailboxes.
Okay.
See, we don't actually send to churches per se, so figuring out how many congregations that represents is different. It is within all of 50 U.S. states that we have subscribers, so
okay.
It's a pretty broad swath.
Yeah, I mean, so I really can't think of anything else that would be better than the Christian Chronicle to be a forum as to where we can exchange ideas. So that's why we are doing it with the Christian Chronicle. Plus, Eric and I have gotten to know each other. We presented here last few years together, and we have a good relationship. We're not a denomination, as you know, so we don't have a headquarters. We don't have a general minister. But we are a fellowship. And so one of the reasons we're doing this survey is so that we can draw from each other's experience, both good and bad. And boy, both good and bad came out of this survey. And then we can avoid reinventing the wheel, because there's a lot of churches that are trying stuff that's been tried elsewhere and didn't work or something. So I thought it'd be a good place where we could just sort of gather data on that sort of thing. And then in academic interest, I'm an academic, so I'm interested in what's going on in the Church of Christ, just what are we thinking, what are we doing, what are some of our hot topics. Encouragement. I think it's important that we find out what we're doing right, and then find out what are some of our challenges. So that's why I have lessons to learn. There's always room for improvement. So how did it happen? Well, basically, I'm just going to run through this. Eric and I created a survey in four parts. So the four surveys are congregational life, church and culture, evangelism, and church and the future. These are the four surveys that we blasted out through Christian Chronicle. Eric has been really good about this. Is he got us set up on WooFoo, which is a survey site that a lot of academics use, a lot of churches use. It's a wonderful tool called WooFoo. And we got respondents from, most of our respondents came from these Christian Chronicle blasts. But Mike Cope sent out some blasts, and a few other key people, strategists, sent out some blasts. When I say blasts, like these email blasts and blog blasts. And then Pepperdine Church Relations gave me a little money to work with to hire some students to just do some of the basic work of tallying these numbers, crunching these numbers. And the response exceeded our expectations. We've had around 5,000 people respond to these. In fact, we quit blasting it out because within the first few hours, we saw, after we blasted it out, within the first few hours, we had several hundred respondents. We're like, wow, this is more than we can handle. But we ended up looking at a few thousand surveys, but we're at 5,000. We haven't blasted out anymore because we just have more than we can deal with right now. The most popular was the Congregational Life. I think we have about 2,000 people that did that survey. The vast majority of our respondents, of course, were from the Churches of Christ, because that's where all of our networks are. Australia, Canada, UK were some of the others. We got some from Africa, China. We got some from different places, but not many. Almost all of them were coming from the United States. And the top states, Texas, is that a surprise to you?
No.
By a long shot, the vast, or I shouldn't say majority, but the by far the number one state was Texas. We can tell where they come from. We can tell what states these come. Tennessee was second, was an easy second. Alabama's third. California was fourth. This may have something to do with me because I kind of emailed it out to some of my colleagues here and friends. And then in fifth, sixth, seventh. Here's where the other states that did really well in terms of response: Oklahoma, Georgia, Arkansas, Florida, New Mexico, Kentucky, Ohio. What this does is tells you where our fellowship is pretty strong. I think that's what it tells you. If you think about Church of Christ states, this is what you get. All right, top cities. Abilene was the top city. Not by a long shot, but Abilene was, as of April 21, Abilene was had the most respondents. Houston was second, Nashville, Fort Worth, and then you had several. One I found was interesting is Portales, New Mexico, made the list down here. Portales and Malibu made the list, which is not a whole lot of Church of Christ people comparatively in Portales or Malibu. But there again, that was from me sending it out to my friends. And so they responded and sent it on to their friends. But Tyler, Texas, where's Greenwich? Is that North Carolina? Greenwich. Greenwich?
Greenwich.
Anyone know where that is? Okay, well,
Connecticut.
Okay, well, had a bunch of people from Greenwich.
Greenwich.
Okay, the British pronunciation there. Lubbock, Texas, not surprising. A lot of Christian college there in Lubbock.
Canberra was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, Canberra.
The Australians must have been forwarding it around.
Yeah, we could tell that the Australians were forwarding it on to each other. So. All right, the average years of attendance in the Church of Christ of our 5,000 or so respondents, right around 40 years. So, I mean, we got a nice broad response from people. So this was the average, right at 40, which is about my age. I'm 41, so it's right around my age is kind of your average responder. the vast majority of them, 80%, grew up in the Churches of Christ. So it's all taken care of, Ernie. Thank you. Did they ever attend a Church of Christ school? Yes, most of them. So around over half of our respondents attended a Church of Christ elementary school or secondary school or college. So I thought that was significant. I wasn't expecting it to be that high. I was expecting maybe 1 out of 4, 1 out of 5, something like that. But over half come from Church of Christ schools.
You're learning a lot about the demographics of the Christian Chronicle's readership here, too. Yes. That it
and
trends
those,
very much
and
that way.
And those who respond to surveys.
And the people that tend to respond to surveys are the ones that feel passionate about that. So you have to take that into account.
Yeah. Did you hear that? Basically, Christian Chronicle blasts would have affected things. And so Christian Chronicle readers, probably an educated lot, by and large.
Highly educated. Very smart.
And then some of the people that would respond to a survey. So we ended up getting over half from the Church of Christ schools. Interestingly, male and female, it's about half and half. Eric and I were worried that the vast majority would be guys, because guys are real passionate about this, and that the women would say, oh, no, you know, we're not going to worry about this. But it was right at half and half, about half guys, about half gals. Depended on which survey, but of the four, it was all, I mean, one would be 52, one would be 48, one would be 49, one would be 51. It was about 50-50, basically representing our membership. Are they married? 80% are married, 12% single, 5% divorced, and 1% widowed or widower. Which convinces me that we have the most highly successful marriages in the entire United States. I don't know what to make of that, because nationally, half of marriages divorce. That's a tricky statistic, but basically half of marriages divorce. So the fact that only 5%. Of our respondents took the survey. Does anyone have any theory as to what's up with that?
I'm just curious, your definition of marriage, though, you didn't define that as first marriage.
Right, yeah. We didn't break it down that far. But, in other words, you're saying that probably if somebody was divorced and remarried, they probably would have just said married.
Yes.
I see, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. So, yeah.
I think often in general, we don't welcome divorced people back into our churches.
Yeah, that may be. Maybe the people who get divorces move on.
I can say from my work at the Christian Chronicle, this is sad that I have to say this, but there have been times, especially early on, I've been working for the Chronicle about 12, 13 years now, I'd be talking to someone and they almost felt like, you can't quote me in your paper because I've been divorced. Like, and we would have been talking about, you know, like missions in Africa, something that had absolutely nothing to do with that person's status. But it was that level of stigma that we saw even as recently as 10 years ago, that some people thought that they could never be quoted in a Christian publication because of that.
Mm. So maybe in the Churches of Christ, people really feel maybe like second-class citizens if they have a divorce. I wonder if that goes on. Maybe that's something we need to work on. But I do feel like that this was the first time we've done this survey, and so we made some mistakes. Not necessarily mistakes, but we did things that we'll need to correct for next time. And this is one of those. I mean, you point out something very obvious, that if somebody has had a divorce, that's not accounted for in the categories that we gave. So. But, you know, whenever you let people write in stuff instead of clicking a box, then it gets hard to tally that, because you have to go through by hand and tally everything and understand what they're saying. So it's so much easier just to tick a box, you know. But I bet we could set it up to where you could say divorced and remarried,
yeah,
you know, something
and
like
we
that.
We may want to think about for future surveys collecting attitudes toward divorce. How is it viewed in your congregation? So that's good food for thought for the future. We're hoping to repeat this next year and kind of refine the survey. So any input you guys have along those lines as you see it, we'd appreciate that.
Yeah, we'd love. And by the way, feel free to go on to the Christian Chronicle blog. I wanted to say this at the beginning. Christian Chronicle has a blog dealing with this,
Of our main website now. ChristianChronicle.org is our main website, and we've incorporated blog-like elements into that. You can actually find the links to the surveys on ChristianChronicle.org and see the and leave responses via Facebook or a couple of other media, and we've got some good feedback from that.
Yeah, so you can leave your responses there in the on the webpage so we can know what you're thinking about the survey. Yes?
Please don't go where you started with this, trying to compare national divorce statistics on the way. This says nothing about the health of marriage.
Right.
Yeah.
It's meaningless.
Yeah, so, but, well, I mean, actually, that was tongue-in-cheek. because the 5%, I'm sure our divorce rate's higher than 5% in the Churches of Christ, but I don't know. How old are our respondents? Well, they were. We got a nice big spread in age. So we have 18% were under 30, 31 to 50 was 43%. So as you can see, it's a nice broad age group for respondents. 71 and up was only 4%, but 51 to 70 we had 31 out of 3. So I was impressed by that. What church services and activities do you attend regularly? Interestingly, in our churches, and here's the point. I'm just going to go ahead and take your attention to the point. We are very active in our church, in our Christian activities. But almost everybody goes to Sunday morning worship and Sunday morning Bible class. Or at least this is what they say on surveys. You know, this is the thing about surveys. You don't know if people are, you know, if they're saying what they think or what they're actually doing, or their perceptions, you know. But whatever the case, almost everyone goes to Sunday morning worship, Sunday morning Bible class. Wednesday nights, I was surprised by this, because in Malibu, Wednesday nights, people don't assemble on Wednesday nights. Very few assemble on Sunday nights. So I don't know if that's just part of being the secularized left coast or what, but we don't really gather much in the evenings out here in California or here in Malibu. But looking at this Wednesday night service, over 2/3 attend Wednesday night services. So I was impressed by that. That's a lot of these are big commitments that people are making to their churches. Sunday night worship at the church building. About half of the respondents go to church on Sunday nights. Sunday night home group Bible studies, about a quarter. So that's about 75% of people that are going to church, of our respondents, they're going to church on Sunday nights. Yeah.
Does the Sunday night home group Bible studies, that include small groups that meet at other times during the week? A lot of churches have small groups on Wednesdays or weekends.
I think it does. I'll go back and check, but we did incorporate that into the question because some of them are Sunday nights, some of them are other times of the week as well.
Well, I think what you're talking about is here, the other Bible studies and activities. I think this question said Sunday night at your house.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah, and this was the catch-all for...
It'd be nice to know how many people in Churches of Christ are meeting in small groups. You know, yeah. No matter when it is.
Yeah, and I think that this is why I created this category, just to catch all those people that say, well, I do, but it's at a different time. Other Bible studies.
Aaron, are you aware of the studies that they've done where they ask, you know, on average, you know, you attend church on a Sunday and the result comes back 40%. But then when they ask the question, did you actually attend church last Sunday? And it comes back 20%. Now, that's across America.
Interesting.
Across churches.
Yeah.
So people intend to go, but actually last week they may not have actually physically gone.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would come out differently. Did you go last Sunday?
Yeah.
How that would compare.
Surveys are, of course, notoriously inaccurate. That what they do is they give you a big picture of things. So, for example, I know one thing that social scientists are doing right now is they're asking the same question twice in a survey, and people answer differently often. They'll ask you a question early on in the survey, and then 10 minutes later you'll answer the same question, but you'll answer it differently. So, I've taken many surveys that do that, and for the life of me, I can't remember what I said in the first part of the survey. Like, oh, you know what? I answered this question before. Instead of going back, and sometimes they won't let you go back. You're sort of locked in. So, yeah, no, surveys are like statistics. They're notoriously inaccurate, but they do give you a sense. They do give you a sense, and that's the best that can be done. You know?
I like that question, though. That may be something we want to incorporate in the future.
Yeah.
No, really? Did you go to church?
Really? Yeah. Did you go last Sunday? Did you go to church last Sunday night? Yeah.
Send a PDF of your bulletin that you picked up.
But regardless, are you guys impressed by the amount of church going that we perceive ourselves to be doing? Maybe it's my, being
again,
in California, but that seems like a lot.
It's a self-selected group of respondents.
Yeah.
So it's not representative of what my church is like. It's what it's representative of the person who answered the survey.
Yeah, so it'd be Christian Chronicle readers and their friends. Yeah.
And those who bothered. I mean,
yeah.
Out of 100,000 readers, you've got 5,000 responses. That's a pretty small number, really.
Yeah, that's true. And what you're seeing here is the very dedicated hardcore. So I think that maybe we can glean a little information about this specific group of people from this survey too.
What we need to do is create a survey for all of you who are on the margins of the Church of Christ and really don't like taking surveys. Would you please take the survey?
We'd have to pay them.
Okay.
Same problem.
Yeah. Question.
I'm wondering to get the dynamic of the other people who are maybe not as crazy about this, maybe ask the people who are taking the surveys, what is your average attendance on Sunday morning, and what is your average attendance on Sunday night, to kind of get a better demographic.
Okay. And, well, we did ask...
Or what's the percentage?
Yeah. We did ask this question. Estimate the average Sunday morning attendance at your congregation. We didn't ask for an estimation of the Sunday night attendance, but we certainly could. So... But and I think we were expecting this. What we should have done is we should have provided categories. But we asked people to estimate, and then we broke it down into these categories. Churches that are under 100, about 20% of our respondents. Now, Eric has told me that the vast majority of our churches are 100 or less. Is it majority or?
I don't know if it would be a vast majority, but... One of the more accurate instruments that we have for measuring Churches of Christ in the United States is the directory that's put out by 21st Century Christian called Churches of Christ in the United States. There is a new version. They do it every 3 years. I think there's a new version scheduled to come out next year.
Correct.
And it shows a slight decline in the numbers every 3-year jump and just in the last two or three directories that they've done. If you look at those numbers that they report, the majority of our congregations are going to be 100 members or less. So we're not following that trend precisely with the data that we've got here. We tend to be getting folks who go to larger congregations as the respondents, it appears. Yes, sir?
The majority of congregations are smaller than 100, but the majority of attendees are at congregations larger than 100.
Oh, that's a very interesting trend.
You've got a lot of
He said
of
the majority of our congregations are 100 people or less, but the majority of our members go to larger congregations. So we found 58% of our respondents were in churches 100 to 500, and this group could be split roughly half and half between the 250 mark. So, and then... I was impressed by these two categories because we're not really known for mega churches in Churches of Christ. But look at that. 11% came from churches from 500 to 1,000, and then 11% came from churches above 1,000. And how many churches do we have above 1,000?
You could
it's
count
not going to be many.
Yeah, no, you should be able to count them on two hands, I would think. So
maybe
more than that.
Maybe a few more than that, but it's not just a huge number. So one thing I've heard from ministers, those of you that are ministers here, I don't know if you've agree with this or not, but there seems to be a wall that a congregation hits when it gets to about 700 members. Right. The breaking past that and going on to what would then be defined as a mega church, if you put that at 1,000, some people would want to put that a lot higher. That evidently there's some kind of a barrier there that it's very hard to kind of get past that mark growth-wise. That may be the point at which the ministries have to transform on some kind of a level or something like that. So we've seen a little bit of evidence of that.
So maybe there's a wall around 700 people. I have yet to reach the wall in any of the churches where I've ministered through the years. I'm still longing for that wall. So estimate the age distribution of your church. This was impressive. It was just nice and broad. 30% are under 30. Keep in mind, this is perception. This is a perception question. Estimate the age distribution. But people are saying that, well, we got about a third of us that are in the youth, about a third of us that are middle-aged, and about a third of us that are over 55. So the point is, our churches are pretty balanced in terms of age, or at least that's the perception of our respondents. They think that we're balanced. So I was impressed by that. Estimate the ethnic composition of your church. Asian, 2%. African American, 13%. Hispanic, 6%. Caucasian, 77%. And other, 2%. So here's the point that we found here. In the USA, our churches are predominantly white. We do not reflect our nation's ethnic makeup when it comes to Hispanics or Asians. So, in 2012, the USA was 63% white, 17% Hispanic, 12% black, and 5% Asian. So, according to our respondents, we're doing fine in the African-American category. It's almost mirroring the national race makeup. But in Caucasian, we were a little heavy in the Churches of Christ. I guess it's always a good thing to have more than the national average in your church, but where we're not doing well is in the Asians, because our nation is 5% Asian, but our church is only 2%. But the real, I mean, a real problem here is the Hispanic. We're just half of what the national average is there, so we need to encourage our Hispanic brothers and sisters with some of these statistics and just say what can be done here. For some reason, we're not connecting there.
Yes, ma'am.
And was the survey available in Spanish as well?
No, it wasn't. That's obviously going to be a shortcoming of the data. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what the actual number is for Latinos in Churches of Christ. I wish we had Dan Rodriguez here to talk about that. But I think it's probably safe to say it is below the national average. And
yes,
that's something that we're working on at the Chronicle as we want to launch a series looking at Churches of Christ with Spanish language and outreach to Latinos, and how are we doing compared to what's available nationwide? So,
see, I come from New Mexico. In New Mexico, there has not been an outright majority for many years in terms of race. But the second state that where whites were not a majority just happened last month. Guess what state it was in America? It was California.
California.
Yeah, California no longer has a majority race. And guess what the third state is? It's going to happen soon.
Texas.
Well, it's going to happen in a few years. Texas. Texas will be the third state. And word on the street is the Republican Party is scrambling because Texas has always been their base. So, but it's going to be the third state that does not have an outright white majority. So, but we, in the Churches of Christ, we have to reach out better to Hispanics. If we have a future in the Southwest, that's going to have to happen. And much of my life's been lived in the Southwest, in New Mexico and Texas and California. Do members of your church attend events associated with other Church of Christ congregations? The point, let me just jump down to the point. Our congregations connect with each other for many different things. And I was encouraged by this. Perhaps unsurprisingly, our number one thing that we connect with other churches, just barely, is singing events. Does that surprise you, or does that seem predictable? Predictable? And then the other things are Bible lectures. That connects us in the Churches of Christ together. We didn't put Christian Chronicle, because I don't know that we participate in Christian Chronicle. We read it, you know. But gospel meetings, youth events, church-affiliated camps, LTC, and keep in mind, people are listing this stuff, so we just had to go through there and add all the responses, which was a lot of work. But then the other things that appeared several times are Bible Bowl, missions work. Apparently people get together to support missionaries or go with other churches on mission trips. And then women's gatherings was down at 4%. So ladies, get together with other Church of Christ ladies and have lady events.
Can I had a few things to say on that. I might want to use the mic.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was interesting to me that the level seemed higher than what I was expecting here. But this is one that, as Dyron alluded to, is a free response. So we actually had a lot of anecdotal evidence from some of the respondents who said, you know, we know that these events go on, but outside of our congregation's own walls, we don't really participate in that much. We saw that over and over again. There are actually more and more ladies' events that I don't feel were probably accurately represented here. In fact, in our issue that just went to press yesterday before I got on the plane, we reported on a conference in Wichita, Kansas, that drew women walking with God, that drew a record 1,200 folks in attendance. They had to move venues from the church building to a community center and sold out of the extra seats within minutes online. So there is a huge interest in women's events as well. And it is the Bible lectures and things like this that go on, but there is also kind of a disconnect that I saw, you know, just a lot of the anecdotal responses about that. We know that these events go on. Several of them were preachers that responded that said, I go to this event with one of our elders just so that our church can kind of say, okay, we have a presence at this event. But none of the members go, and a lot of it had to do with age. You know, they don't want to drive to a different place. They're not familiar with it. They're not comfortable there. So that was part of the anecdotal evidence that just kind of came through there, is that there is kind of a disconnect, that the events are available, but there are a lot of our members that stay within the confines of their own building. It's a challenge for me. I go to a congregation in Oklahoma City that has close to 2,500 members. It's a large church. And I often say, we don't seem to know what's going on at the 1,100-member Church of Christ that meets a mile and a half from our building. And other area congregations as well. That there is just this, we become a microcosm unto ourselves and don't have a lot of idea of what's going on outside of our own walls.
Yeah. So I would say a twofold point. Number one is it's impressive that we are doing things, but I think we can do better. I think we can do better. So we're always strengthened and encouraged whenever we do things like Bible lectures and Bible Bowl. It's always encouraging women's events. Okay, so now we have finished up the congregation. That was the last question on the congregational life survey, is do you attend other events? So now we're going to go into the evangelism survey. Okay? Yeah, question.
Can I ask one question before you go?
Yeah, sure.
Maybe I'm beating into this, but have you done any studies on any ecumenical movements within our church to attend events in other denominations or community churches?
Yeah, well, Churches of Christ are hamstrung when it comes to ecumenical activities. We do some. I do some. Several professors try to do ecumenical things. But usually ecumenical events are organized at a high level in church government. So you'll have the general minister and president sort of organizing a thing with ecumenical officers. We obviously are a congregational church. We're a non-denominational church, so it's difficult for them to reach out to us. You know, who would they call? If the Methodists and the Presbyterians and the Episcopalians and the Disciples of Christ, if they're going to, let's say, have a community-wide prayer service, they can't call the Church of Christ. All they can do is call one congregation, maybe one guy, one person. They can't really call the denominational structure to get our fellowship involved. They can just get one person involved. So that hamstrings us. Or they can call the Gospel Advocate headquarters, as we talked about. Yes.
It really does not hamstring us at the local level.
Right, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Which is really where fellowship...
A lot of ecumenical activity takes place.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think maybe the question is, if we have a community Thanksgiving service organized by the local ministerial alliance, do we participate? Mm-hmm. Answer for our congregation, yes.
Yeah.
Our preacher was the speaker.
Okay, yeah.
Or at Easter sunrise.
Yes.
And again,
yeah.
Answer today, yes.
Yeah.
Answer 10 years ago, no.
Yeah, I think we're getting better at that. But so, for example, if you in the Methodist churches, you'll call the Methodist office, and they have an infrastructure for emailing that out and getting the Methodist churches galvanized. Churches of Christ, if you called one Church of Christ, I don't know that it would be the same as calling all the Churches of Christ. My guess is that the one church that would come out is the church you called, and the other Churches of Christ in the city probably wouldn't even know about the event. So because we're congregational, a lot of our congregations are pretty testy about this issue, too. They'll say, "Hey, what are you talking about? We're congregational." You get some of that.
In many towns, though, you can count the churches of Christ in your hand. You know, I mean, even in Wichita Falls, where we have 100,000 people, right. I think maybe only 7 of us. So you can call, you know, all of them. You know, but I kind of wanted to know, you know, to what level of, you know, do we merge with others? You know, I mean, do we just attend the citywide events, or, you know, are we, you know, going to worship together sometimes? In my city, we had a Pray for Rain event where all the, you know, denominations got together, and they had the worship service, you know, and they had, you know, multiple preachers, and, you know, they asked one of our ministers, they called us, and, you know, he declined, you know, the preacher, so...
Well, we haven't really accounted for that in the survey. I have reported on the trend you're talking about for the Christian Chronicle just a few months ago. And the general feedback that I got is that we are seeing more and more ecumenical services that a Church of Christ minister does not feel like he shouldn't have, that we'll go to and be a part of that. There was a big one in Amarillo around Thanksgiving. However, of course, there still is the stigma of saying... and this was the feedback that I got from a lot of folks, is that participating in something with denominational churches is tantamount to endorsing the practices of those churches. So that, of course, is the stumbling block. Do we stay completely outside of that world? Do we interact with it in hopes of influencing? Or do we just tacitly accept that I'm okay, you're okay? That's kind of the dilemma that's there. On the most common level, what you will see among most Churches of Christ, if there is any level of cooperation ecumenically, it's going to be in something that I would almost, I don't want to use the term innocuous, but we're talking about Habitat for Humanity, Salvation Army, things like that, that can have kind of a broader field that don't really seem to get into faith and evangelism so much. Lots of our ministers are hospital chaplains or police chaplains. Sometimes they actually report to Presbyterian ministers who are the head chaplain for the fire department or something like that. And they don't really see that much as a conflict so much as just part of a community service. So that's more common than the actual getting together as part of a prayer service to pray for rain. Yes, ma'am.
So radio is, I like to listen to things where I don't have to listen to cussing and all this kind of stuff. So I put through the Christian channels that I get, and on the Christian channels there's never anything to do with the Church of Christ. It's always, and I'm wondering if we're not kind of falling short on that. I mean, it seems like radio, at least we could get together and support the radio that supports our beliefs.
Okay. The question, if you didn't hear it, was about radio particularly. Why do we not hear Church of Christ events announced on Christian radio stations? And our local chapter of K-Love in Oklahoma City, every once in a while there will be an event at the Church of Christ that will pop up on there. And every once in a while, K-Love will report stuff out of the Christian Chronicle, we found out. So I'm very encouraged by that. I'll start hearing the radio and say, "That sounds like a story we said." And I'll say, "According to the Christian Chronicle." Yes! So, you know, there's a little bit of interaction there, but by and large, that's not the case. There are a few online Church of Christ acapella-oriented radio stations. You don't have anything that's being broadcast over the airwaves that I know of, but there is an ACCA radio, I believe, that's out of Alabama, and a couple of other options like that as well. So that's kind of as far as we are with that.
The best thing that ever happened for Church of Christ Radio, who was the country music singer that sang a song about Little Rock, Arkansas? "I like the preacher at the Church of Christ." Do you, any of you remember that song?
Nobody has any idea what you're talking about right now.
"I think I'm on a roll here in Little Rock. Da 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 da, wait, wait and see." You guys know that song?
No.
"I think I'm on a roll here in Little Rock. Without you, baby, I'm not me." It was a big, big hit in country music.
Not that big.
Quick survey. Who thinks Dyron should stop singing now?
What was his name? Do any of you remember it? Anyway, it was a...
Colin Ray.
Yeah, Colin Ray had a big number one hit. And in the song, it's about a guy whose life has fallen apart. And he visits the Church of Christ. and turns his life around in Little Rock. The song's called Little Rock. So you have all have your phones, make a note, and go listen to it. It's a great song. But it's been about maybe 15 or 20 years ago. But have Church of Christ in there. Okay, now we're in the evangelism, the second of the four. So tomorrow we'll do surveys 3 and 4, which deal with church and culture. So we're going to be tomorrow we'll be talking about hot button things that like what's happening in our Bible classes. We're going to look at biblical topics tomorrow. We're going to look at non-biblical topics that we're talking about and preaching about, things that our congregations are dealing with from the pulpit and in the Bible classes. Then we're going to talk about tomorrow about hot button topics. And then the fourth survey, which will be the second half of tomorrow, deals with the church and the future. So we're going to talk about things like, do you feel optimistic or pessimistic about the future of the church? Do you feel like we're connecting with youth? So that's a big part of the future of the Church of Christ. So that's what's on tap for tomorrow. And we're going to share with you some quotations, some that are disturbing people, some that are encouraging. So, but today, with the remainder of the class, we're going to look at the evangelism, the results of the evangelism. It's only about 4 or 5 slides here. It says, how would you describe the church that you attend? Growing 46%, maintaining 38%, declining 17%. So the point, we think we're growing. The statistics say that we're not. We apparently peaked in the 80s. So we're losing members. But we think we're growing. So I thought that was interesting. Either that or our respondents are from churches that are growing. I mean, that's always a possibility. But again, it's a perception question. Yeah.
One of the instructors at Sunset, Chris Winford, he's a psychologist. And he did a big survey of a few states around Texas. I think he surveyed over 100 Churches of Christ, and he said that I think only 3 of them had a positive growth.
Wow.
And all the rest were either neutral or had a negative growth.
Yeah, okay.
So
that may be a dark trend in our horizon here. Yeah.
Perhaps another category that would be helpful there is transfers, because if people transfer their membership from one church to another, a congregation grows, a congregation.
Growth by evangelism versus growth by transference, moving the sheep around.
Yeah. So, I mean, the brotherhood does not grow, the congregations.
Yeah, right. Brother, you had to come.
Oh, yes. I was saying maybe there's just a certain fragment represented on this one, because I know in some areas there's a strong decline, even going back to the denomination.
Correct.
So I think this is maybe your more stronger supporters of the church.
Right.
That's speaking, because the ones that's not so strong
probably wouldn't even respond. Yeah, that's a good point.
And it may be disturbing that the numbers are coming out this way for the cheerleaders.
So do you understand what he's saying? Saying that these numbers are somewhat optimistic, but maybe these are our champions. These are the Church of Christ champions that are responding to our survey. So if you took a nice random sample of Church of Christ members, which you're never going to get, because you know people can choose whether or not they want to respond to these things, I think you're always going to get people with some sort of vested interest to take a Church of Christ survey. But look at our baptisms. The average baptism is 16. That's a lot of baptisms for average for our churches. Please estimate how many baptisms take place in your congregation per year. The average was 16. Look at the range. One of the churches had 300. Where was that church at that had 300 baptisms? Right here, the range.
I don't know. I have to look back through the data.
Yeah, we had a church that had...
I got a caveat. Finish what you're saying, and then I'll add some.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying that. But 40% of our responses, so nearly half, are saying that we just had 5 or less than 5 baptisms.
Well, this is where it becomes a little, and this is something we're going to have to account for in the future iterations of this survey. It becomes a little hard to judge here, because you mentioned 300. I can tell you that the congregation I attend in Oklahoma City has hundreds of baptisms every year, most through our prison ministry. And that is what a lot of congregations are reporting, because that's part of the church. The real challenge there is the recidivism rate and the retention rate after release from the correctional facility. It's very difficult to track these things. In many cases, I even learned the law itself works against congregations. There's a law in Oklahoma, I believe, that says that if you've had contact with somebody inside the prison, even as part of a prison ministry, I don't think you're allowed to get in touch with them for 6 months after release or something
Kansas
like that. Have any of you dealt with that?
Kansas also.
And I actually called somebody that worked for the sheriff's office to say, well, what on earth is the rationale for that? But it is a protective thing for inappropriate relationships that might develop, I think. And it has a lot to do with employees of the Department of Corrections. I got the feeling it was almost kind of aimed at them, and churches are kind of caught up as the unfortunate side effect of this, is that so there's almost a state-mandated lack of communication there right after release. So a lot of these folks are getting baptized. That may be your 300 church right there might have been counting.
Yeah.
Prison
or a church that does missions in India, for example, where I do work in India. I'm going there in a few weeks. But in India, the people love to get baptized. The Hindus, they just get baptized. And so you'll have a missionary go down there, and he'll baptize 100 people in a week. And it's no big deal to them, but they don't convert to Christianity. They just get baptized. Because to them, that's just part of, you know, trying to please the gods. You know, this religious man, this guru, is telling from the West. He's telling us all to get baptized. They all just go down to the river and get baptized. They don't know what's going on, though. So there's probably prison, missions, different things that's driving some of these whopping statistics.
Okay.
Basil had a comment.
Yes.
Yeah. For the baptisms in congregations every year, do we have a distribution for that? So are we seeing, you know, a lot of churches have 200, 300, 250, 300 baptisms, and then a lot of churches have zero, and so it comes out to about 16.
Yeah.
So is it some very few churches are driving the growth, and a lot of churches are stagnating, or is it kind of evenly spread out? All the churches are growing at about the same rate.
What is the distribution? What is the statistical term there? I can't standard deviation
standard
or whatever
deviation,
things like that.
We
need to go back and look at that because I'm afraid it may be what you're talking about there, that you do have a few with very high numbers and then several that are maybe one or two. So that's the general feel I get, but we need to go back and verify that. Yes.
I think maybe also considering the fact that these can distinguish between a person who is coming in and learning the gospel for the first time and is baptized, or a child that's been raised in the church and is baptized. Because that's what we see a lot, is we see our children of the families that are already part of the congregation to become Christians, as opposed to bringing people in.
That would be an interesting thing to ask for the future as well, would be how many of these baptisms are. I remember, I can tell you anecdotally, the church I grew up in reported the number of baptisms they had this year. The year I got baptized, I remember pointing to that number and telling my dad, I was one of those.
That's right.
Dad said, no, I think they're just counting the ones from outside, the children. I felt horrible. I was like, so I was an assumption in this congregation? And we wonder why we're losing our young people. You know? So that's just one random memory that flashes across my brain.
What specific efforts does your church make to evangelize its community? By far, the winner here was service to the community. This is sort of the new evangelism. Bible-oriented events, media flyers and mailings, only 11%. We invest a lot into that, or at least in the past we have. Personal relationships, 9%. Keep that in your brain, personal relationships, because we're going to come to that in the next slide. Door knocking is falling off the charts. That used to be, when I was even a teenager, that was what you did. We're going to evangelize. Let's go door knocking. You know what's interesting? We've abandoned that. But guess what denomination is growing by leaps and bounds in America and in the world?
Mormonism.
Why?
Because they door knock.
They door knock. Well, I don't. I mean, I know that they don't. Their success rate's not that high.
Correct.
But a lot of people do come to Mormonism because of that. So it's fascinating.
The other one is Jehovah's Witnesses.
Jehovah's Witnesses, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we've abandoned door knocking. And I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things. I don't know. I don't know how to, you know, quantify whether or not that's a good strategy anymore. I think that we're all kind of bashful about it because it's basically just the Jehovah's Witness and the Mormons that do that. We're Church of Christ. Oh, you're Mormon. No, we're not Mormons. We're Church of Christ without the letter. You know, we get into these complicated discussions. Yes.
One out of ten personal relationships.
Personal relationships.
Okay. Invite you into my home and study the Bible.
Okay. Oh, wow. So 1 out of 1,000. That's not all encouraging, but they're growing. I mean, the Mormons are growing rapidly.
Not that rapidly in the U.S.
One sociologist, Rodney Stark, is calling it the fastest growing religious movement in the world. So. I don't know that you would. I don't know that you can say that in an unqualified way because Pentecostalism is now at 600 million people. So Pentecostal, the Pentecostal movement. But okay, so what specific efforts does your church make to evangelize this community? Personal relationships is 9. Now look at this next slide. What, in your opinion, is the most effective way for churches to evangelize? And 33% said personal relationships. So what's interesting, let me just flip back here. What is the best way? 1 out of 3 of us said the best way to evangelize is through personal relationships. Okay? But what do we do? Personal relationships is 9%. So the point down here, we think personal relationships is effective for evangelism, but we don't necessarily do it. Isn't that interesting? That we all, or a bunch of us, 1 out of 3 of us say, this is the best way to reach people for Christ. But only one out of three say that's the best way. But 1 out of 10 or less take that approach. I thought that was really helpful to see that juxtaposed next to each other. Question?
Just a theory as to, I've seen this also where there's this idea almost where somebody else will handle that. Somebody else in the congregation or a group in my congregation will handle that. And so I don't have to worry about it personally myself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's not on the front of our minds to take that opportunity.
Yeah. I wonder if we have some phobia about busting out on religion with somebody that we've gotten close to in work or something. I wonder if we think that that's sort of a taboo topic. You're my friend, but you know, I don't necessarily want to, because I respect that you're a Methodist, or I respect that you're whatever you are. So I really don't want to bring religion into this relationship. I wonder if that goes on in our minds.
Yeah.
I don't really want to pollute our relationship with religion. Maybe.
Maybe. We're out of time.
See, when are we supposed to end?
It said 45 minutes, right?
Oh,
so
yeah. Sorry, guys.
5 minutes over.
Yeah, okay. So. Well, we'll share with you these quotes. So I was thinking 9:30, so I apologize for that. So we're done. We'll see you tomorrow, where we look at the other one. If you want to stick around, I'll just show you these comments that people made.
There are still some Cokes and Dr. Peppers over here that they have not told us we could not give away to people.
Dr. Pepper, Diet Coke, and Coca-Cola.